Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm the co-host of this edition, Imam Alfred, the president of Religion Means Alive. And today's host will be Alfred Y. Muhammad, 2020 graduate of Morehouse College.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. I'm thrilled to be back again for another edition of Religion Means Alive. Slowly but surely, we're putting the broadcast back on, and we're just going to give these next couple of episodes a go, just getting used to the interface again. But today, we're going to do a special edition of Religion Means Alive, and we often say that here, but today we're going to talk about, on this Saturday, the recent happenings going on within this country. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that as Secretary Rice once says, America is clearly working with a bit of a birth defect. So what we're going to talk about today is the death of George Floyd, Mr. George Floyd, and others. Without further ado, I'm going to get into it. I don't want to beat around the bush and, you know, really trim around it. So my first question to Imam Alfred is, of course, we've seen the death of George Floyd and Miss Breonna Taylor. What do you think ultimately would be the solution in terms of combating what is happening? Because these things that happen tend to be episodic, right? We tend to see that, you know, if it isn't Sean Bell in 2006 when I was a young kid, then it's Trayvon Martin. And now we're back again with this again, you know, with Breonna Taylor and Mr. George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery. Excuse me, I forgot to mention our dear brother Ahmaud Arbery. So these things happen in intervals, they're episodic. And afterwards, people go home. You know what I'm saying? Nothing happens afterwards. And what a lot of people are clamoring for is some type of solution or some type of move toward a solution. And just to provide some context behind it. So what do you see as a potential solution to these episodes, these seizures in the American life?
Thank you, Alfred. Congratulations on your graduation from Morehouse College. And also congratulations on your working at the Carter Center for Peace. I first want to take a deep breath and tell you that one of the biggest rebellions that took place in America, not a revolution, but a rebellion that took place in America, was the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a graduate of Morehouse College. And I've seen these events happen every 10 years, principled people who are very sick and tired and frustrated. And then we have a criminal element who doesn't mind going into your house, robbing you, stealing from you. They join in. And we have, obviously, outside agitators who have an agenda. And that agenda is not us. That agenda is the revolution in the United States of America, as they perceive it. Then I suspect strongly that there are white supremacy groups that are involved. They were less pronounced in the past uprisings, such as the, I don't call these uprisings, these are episodes. These are episodes of frustration because we don't have proper leadership. I'm saying today, 2020, May the 29th, but I'm taking responsibility to offer leadership to African-Americans. African-Americans need leadership. We need leadership. As one journalist told me today, he said if T.I. and others really want to do something, they would fund my action to have a men's association similar to the FOI. I don't say we'd be FOI because we're not FOI. I'm not a fruit of this farm. I'm not a fruit, period. I'm not a fruit. I'm not an apple. I'm not an orange. I'm a man. Part of being a man is having muscle. Part of being a man is having statistical fortitude. Part of being a man is having money. And what is needed is organized action daily. What I saw in Minneapolis was chaos and a melee. It was not organized. It really, in the long run, it doesn't work for our benefit. I understand the frustration. I get it. I read it. I'm 73 years old. I've been through these practically every since I was 16, the Wyatt riots. I've seen these types of events. I've seen Harlem burn up. So what usually happens is work disappears. We see commercial areas being torn apart, loss of life, but not much happening. Why? Because this is an episode. This is a reaction. Reactions generally are not good. In a medical reaction, it's just a reaction. I'm talking about a systemic approach. And one of the systemic approaches we do have to address, white supremacy, and its manifestation and certain elements in the police department. Now, I'm a city councilman, as you very well know. So I'm not going to come out and make some irresponsible statement about the police. It's not all police. There is an element among police officers who think they have a license to break the law. We're going to show them that in America you can't do that. African Americans have to claim that American citizenship. Number two, I know this is not popular, but I have to be equally as appalled at the killing of our brother in Minneapolis as I am about the brother that was killed on Curtis Street here in Linden by another African American. Murder is murder. And in this case, that officer is guilty, in my opinion, I'm not a lawyer, of murder. He deliberately put his foot on a man's neck until he was dead. I know it was a knee, but he put his foot on it's part of his body to cause death and should be charged with first-degree murder. It's not depraved. It's not negligent. It is a crime. And I what I understand is he and this officer, the victim and the officer, had known each other. So that should be investigated. I'm glad that the Hennepin County State's Attorney finally stepped up and showed some statistical fortitude and had this man arrested.
Okay. You mentioned that there was a lack of leadership among the African Americans. Can you just talk a bit about that? Do you think there are some historical reasons behind why there is a lack of leadership? Do you think it is social? What do you think? What do you think it is?
After the passing of Dr. Martin Luther King, who was the popular leader of the leader of our age, we have suffered from a leadership back. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a leader that represented a segment of the African-American population. We know that he was undercut by the misrepresentation of some placing Minister Malcolm as a leader. Some people have not had the full effect of a leader. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was not fully felt. That was stymied by the presentation of the 9 months or 1 year of Malcolm Shabazz being out of the nation. Malcolm Shabazz was not a leader of the Nation of Islam. He was a member of the Nation of Islam. He was not the leader of the Nation of Islam. He was a leader like I was a leader, like many others were leaders. So we are in a vacuum. And forces inside of the mosque didn't allow Imam Waruddin Muhammad to come up with a liberation theology. But you hear the liberation theology. And what is needed, I'm stepping in that vacuum, and I'm offering leadership to African-American people. You know, I think that the interview on The Breakfast Club by that young interviewer was atrocious. We can't have people that's making all kinds of irresponsible statements, telling people not to vote if you don't do that. I'm a practical politician. Politics is the art of the possibility. It's not theater. It's not a concert. It's not an entertainment arena. It's positions to gain power for the benefit of a said group.
You just went over that the lack of leadership. It actually brings me back to a joke that Dave Chappelle says, and just bear with me here. So he gives a stand-up commentary, and in it he says, he talked about 9/11, and how during 9/11 on MTV they asked Ja Rule. They said, we need to ask Ja Rule about what does Ja Rule think about the September 11th World Trade Center attack, and so Dave Chappelle makes a funny face and everybody starts laughing. He says, why the hell do I want to know about what Ja Rule thinks about, you know, about the September 11th World Trade Center attack? He says, you know, in other words, I want to know, what does the president have to say? What does somebody of substance have to say about the World Trade Center attack? Now, we obviously know it's an abhorrent thing in our country's history. But he talks about how they essentially deferred to some celebrity/rapper who really doesn't have any expertise on the subject. And when I think about that, he gave that interview in the early 2000s. And now we see that more than ever, where you have a lot of people, due to this vacuum that you're talking about, really expressing their views on, you know, the situation that's going on. You have rappers and artists talking about these things. And that's not necessarily a bad thing either, but it just goes to show the fundamental lack of leadership. And you talked about historically what happened to that leadership, but could you just go in depth about that more, about sort of the decline of leadership in our community and what is really stopping leadership from arising?
Well, I want to commend Lil Wayne. He said that he's not qualified, in essence, to speak on these issues. That people just study these issues. We're the only people on the face of the planet where you go and ask an entertainer to opine, certainly not to give a rendering, but opine on an issue that he doesn't know about. It would be like asking me about the space shuttle. I don't know anything about space shuttle. I do know how to get African Americans out of suspended animation and get them to moving so that they can claim their rightful place in the world of education, claim their rightful place in the world of business, claim their rightful place in the world of culture, claim their rightful place in the world of politics. Sensible politics. Politics that deals with equitable distribution of power, rights, and responsibility. Notice I said power, rights, and responsibility. You know, before people can start talking about what rights they have, then they have to all talk about responsibility. And we have to have responsibility. Let me tell you something. I know a few ethnic groups in this country that if you had killed one of them might not be here. The other group, certainly, Mike, you would have been in jail. And that's what it is, not monkey power, making a lot of noise, jumping up and down, entertaining people, a lot of rhetoric. That's not leadership. When one of us, the Nation of Islam, I can talk about that group, I was also in the Civil Rights Movement, brother was attacked, Rufus Johnson, I believe his name was. I can't remember his name. But anyway, he was attacked. Over 2,000 of us surrounded the 28th precinct. We didn't make noise. so he said, oh, it's Malcolm had the problem. No, it was 2,000 organized men. And we said, we're not going to leave the precinct until he was taken to the hospital. And I've seen that happen on several occasions. That's what happens. People respect you. Not a lot of loud talking, but actual leadership. And leadership, I mean, organized people. And organizing and behind organization, there must be standardization. And then there must be harmonization to bring together the ideas and action. We would have been better off if 10,000 of us had stopped street traffic on the highway there in Minneapolis. That would have been better than what turned out to be record property. Here's what we have to look at in this country. We're 13% of this country. We probably have a representation of three times our numbers, probably 39% of the people support us. Would be our ride or die people. They would go with us. But every time you smash an innocent citizen who may be your ally, you have knocked away some allies. It's about gaining influence so people won't harm you. And then I have a private message as we go in leadership to address African American men. How are we to deal with these people? We have to have a strategy. That should be talked about. We need to spend less time protesting and understanding where we are in this country and the volatility of this country at this time. I hope I answered that question.
You certainly answered the first half of the question. But what I was really getting at is in an absence of leadership, we have seen, obviously, and we don't want to go in on entertainers too much. We have seen a lot of entertainers have stepped up and started talking about it, which can be a good thing. But what I'm talking about is where are our leaders who devoted their lives' work to the struggle and the cause of African Americans? And if they are out there, where are they? Is there final? And my third question to sort of add on to it. Is there something inherently wrong within our community that sort of stops a leader from rising? Do we inadvertently destroy our leaders from potentially rising? Is there something fundamentally wrong within our makeup that potentially stops leaders from rising, from real leaders who actually, you know what I mean, who actually study this subject deeply? And this is not to say that the artists do not study these things and these entertainers do not, but entertainers, at the end of the day, have a platform. They have a platform, but they have somebody propping up that platform, and they are only as good as that platform that's being propped up by somebody else. This is just undeniable. So what is fundamentally breaking down within our community that has led to this 50-year power vacuum of leadership within our community? Because we know that right now the leadership just isn't doing it for us. So can you just talk about that?
Sure. First of all, God bless the entertainment. They're taken away from their livelihood to talk about things that they basically are not qualified to talk about. I've been studying this and been in this business of offering leadership for our people almost 65 years. That's a pretty long time. I have studied the leaders of us, our passage. You can't come into leadership without studying the previous one. I studied Dr. King. I studied Dr. Obama. Studied under them. Studied under Gardner, Calvin Taylor, and other great leaders. Took their advice, and our counsel really sat as an apprentice to them. The problem in emerging in leadership is that leadership and entertainment have almost become intertwined. And the reason for that happened in the Civil Rights Movement. Our leaders spent most of that time on television to get the attention. So we became a people of theatrics. And it was theater and entertainment and rap. You know, that's what determined whether a guy was a leader. Now, I was talking about a major leader that everybody knows around. And the only thing that first became a guy could rap. What is his plan for the historical African-American colleges and universities? What is his plan for the absence of hospitals in the age of COVID? What is his plan for urgent care centers? How does he propose to mobilize wealth to create businesses and jobs, COVID and non-COVID? Where are the cultural and entertainment centers for us? Where is the political power that when we go to sit down with the Democrat or Republican Party, we can negotiate? I don't see it. And I think that because this is a fact. Media gives attention to basic clown-like leaders. We have people that have presented themselves. They're not our leaders. They're appointed. They get a TV show, a radio show. They're promoted. They do one demonstration. They get stabbed or something, and all of a sudden they become a leader. That's what has happened. Post-Dr. King, it's been entertaining and theatrics. No one is addressed in the park. Now, let's deal with something that Isaiah you brought up. You alluded to. We know that Willie Lynch is basically a symbolic, a mythology.
Yeah.
But it's real. Myths sometimes point to reality. And what it is that just like here in the Fourth Ward, I've been the councilman in the Fourth Ward, elected. Majority of the people you elected, overwhelmingly elected. And I don't have any opposition. But there are yet maybe 20 people in this particular one, I'll just use this as a microcosm, persistently and consistently Tom to me. They just don't like me because I have decided to ally with another African-American that looked like me. I don't ally with him because he's an African-American. I ally with him because he's right. He has the best plan for the city. And people who used to follow me now condemn me. And perhaps are ready to hang me from my highest tree if they could get to me. Because we are people geared to want inferior leadership, entertainment, and sound bite. And I'm not afraid to say that. And I know that there are people like you. I know there are others out here, others listening to us. That's why I'll be back on Blog Talk Radio. That's why we're going to continuously go on Facebook Live until people send us the money so we can buy time on radio and television and so we can have demonstrations in our neighborhood. We ain't going to demonstrate just for the killing of one of us, but I'm also going to demonstrate for the killing of us by us. The KKK that operates in our, was that African American on Curtis Street in Linden, New Jersey, was he killed by the Klan? I said, yes, he was. The Ku Klux Klan? No, Ken killing Ken. He had a Ku Klux Klan mind, and he killed his own people. So we have many of us operating with a white supremacy mind and black skin, with Frantz Fanon, the psychiatrist, calls it black skin, white mask. In other words, these are people masquerading as black men, but their consciousness is consciousness of death. And they are imbued in the culture of death.
It sounds like you're getting at something, well, really one word, and it's really an adjective, and that's jealousy. My friend and I were actually talking about this the other day about how sometimes as an African-American, when you scroll through social media and you see another African-American do well, the natural course of action emotionally sometimes is to get jealous.
Yes.
And the reason why that's the natural course of action is due to obviously historical reasons that date back to the inception of this country. What do you think we should do to really stop this fundamentally wrong concept that really shapes our worldview in order to make leaders arise? Because that's what seems like you're getting at. It's really ultimately jealousy.
It is.
And hatred for ourselves.
It is breeding. I'm going to go out on the limb. Well, before I go out on the limb, I'm going to stand in the tree. Then I'm going to go out on the limb. Standing in the tree, the great theologian James Cohen came out with a book called The Cross and the Lynching Tree. And in it, he talks about the lynching tree, but Dr. Cohen and others, and Dr. West and others, have not gone into what slavery did to the African-American man in particular. It, in order to oppress men, it had to turn brother against brother. We are conditioned. I'm going to be honest with you. Let me tell you something. I was riding the train one time coming back from Trenton, met a Caucasian American who gave me a copy of The Dreams of My Father. And instantly I looked at the book and got angry. I didn't know this guy. Who is this guy? Turned out it was Barack Obama. He was not even a senator. This guy said, this is somebody you should take a look at. And I got instantly angry. Now, I'm honest enough to admit, and I spent years of psychoanalysis and self-examination, if I can admit, but I had to work on myself. So the problem is, if one has these unconscious feelings, you walk down any street in Minneapolis, in Boston, and I travel all over the United States. I was just in Minneapolis 5 years ago. Now, what kind of street see an African American? Hey, brother. And he looks at me worse and the most hostile person from Big Midget, Minnesota. We have that primitive cultural conditioning. And let me say that. When you kill each other at will, you invite others to kill you. So what is the solution to that? A form of sacred psychoanalysis. Well, I admit that this has happened. And go look in the mirror and say, I am my brother's keeper. I am with my. And when those feelings come up in you, say, die, nigga, die. Because you know that that's a. And what I mean by nigga, that's a feeling. I'm not talking, I don't use the colloquial phrase, my nigga, and all that stuff. A nigga is a manufactured being that is externally directed. It means that he's not of his own will, but it comes from the old English of a piece of steel that moves wood. And wood in scriptural terms means dead life. So dead life is moved by a piece of steel called a nigger. And that's what we're talking about. We're moved by external, just automatic hatred. Much of the killings that took place in Chicago, I'm going on that subject. I'm never going to go out here on the limb and talk to our people about what others are doing to them and not address what we are doing to each other. Also, to my Caucasian brothers, just while talking about the lynch tree and the cross, all of us should come out of the notion that God is in anybody's person. God is not a white man. God is not a black man. Replacing a black God with a white God with a black God is nonsense. God is goodness, righteousness, purity. All that which is good is God. And that's invisible. And when you start seeing each other like that, we will be much better off and get out of this image that try to betray the divine. That would be going a long way to undermining white supremacy and black supremacy as a reaction.
So you were talking about jealousy, and it seems like you believe that it's a real big problem in our community, and there's a fundamental, wall in terms of potentially cultivating the leadership within our community. But seeing as we are pressed for time here on Wild Talk, I just wanted to move toward something else that you talked about in the beginning of this broadcast, which was you said that Americans should take, you said that African Americans should really take back their state in this country. You said that earlier, and you said we reclaim our leadership. What does that mean?
It means that I'm an American. I have paid, I'm not talking the recent American. You and I did a family tree and found out that my great-grandson did was here when James Madison was president. It's a pretty damn long time, isn't it?
Yes, in front of him.
Okay. He was a slave, the fourth president of the United States. While he was while Madison was fourth president of the United States, I had ancestors I can actually trace. My father's granddaddy was a slave, so I paid the price. My uncle Kinley fought in World War I. My brother Joseph fought in World War II. My other brother fought in the Korean War. So I have a stake in this country. I'm a stakeholder. I have to claim it. That doesn't mean when you claim something, somebody else may not try to take it away from you. But as long as we believe and know that this belongs to us and that we have a right to shape America, that's how I see myself. I see myself as an owner of this country. Now, I don't see myself owning property that I have bought, but I see myself in this collective 3,000-mile place called America as one of its rightful owners. And not only that, in the corporate world, they have what is called preferred shareholders. I think we're preferred shareholders since we've been here a long time. We're the founding shareholders. Somebody taught me to make America great again. I said to those who taught me to make America great again, I'm a part of the group that made America real, not again, before. America was not real until 1965. It was just a dangling concept, like a hanging chad or hanging clause.
So what do you think has happened to America, well, to African-Americans claiming their stake in this country? Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would once, throughout his speeches, he would often quote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights in order to sort of twist and tell the establishment of this country, hey, this is, he often brought up the metaphor of this country has a check with insufficient funds and how it's really not living up to what it says in the Constitution and in the Bill of Rights. He would often use that, that same concept claiming your share in this country. What has happened to that ideology?
What happened? I tell you what happened. The man that continued about the king's work, the Mawar D. Muhammad, man that you met as a very young man, was thwarted. That he was thwarted by his own followers and outside forces that turned him into a religious priest as opposed to a world leader. And I'm not saying that he was that. That's what these people turned him into. They came to him for prayers and other things, ritualistic things, but not how to guide America. The man Muhammad took up the responsibility of the freedom movement, and he started something called New World Patriotism Day. That's what brought me back to being a patriot of America. That's what brought me to be willing to die to make this country right, to die to protect this country. That's what we have to claim. Now, that doesn't mean that America is perfect, by far, no means. But in order to perfect this union, then I have to work. But first, I have to see myself owning it. I see myself a part of it. And that's what we're going to do in this urban peace movement when we travel around this country. We're going to imbue into our men, but in particular, the idea that they are owners in this country. And when you're an owner in something, that means you're going to protect it. That means you're going to buy it. That means you're willing to defend it. If we had men, African-American men in particular, walking these streets, we would need policemen in the streets. Our neighborhoods, the police could go home. We wouldn't have the kind of crime that we have. And we're going to build that. And I believe that we're going to build that in the next 10 years. And I'm offering that kind of bold leadership that would make Morehouse a world-class university with its own money that doesn't have to beg philanthropic organizations. I come from the movement of the Army like Muhammad. I'm thrown the other way. Although I'm universal, I'm still in a massive movement for self-help, self-development, and self-responsibility.
So you talked about claiming leadership in America and what that looks like. What do you say that there is a growing, I'm noticing that there is a growing trend within this country, within our community rather, of pessimism, right? People are now saying that now's the time to just essentially, give up America. We've seen over the course of this time that you'll never get what you are talking about out of this country. Okay, and for that reason, we should sort of withdraw. They also say that, you know, what you talked about, a protest standing in the street and not doing anything, sort of a nonviolent protest, doesn't accomplish anything. Instead, we should riot, right? Voting, even what you talked about, you were alluding to, was Charlemagne in his Breakfast Club interview with Joe Biden. How he talked about how, you know, how what Joe Biden said that if he did not vote for the blacks, and how, you know, some people sort of alluded to potentially making people stay home during this election, not voting for Joe Biden or Donald Trump, not voting at all. Essentially a complete retreat.
Yeah.
What do you say to people who...
Well, Charlemagne would never say that to me, because I would tell Charlemagne he's a young charlatan, not a Charlemagne, but a charlatan man. See, charlatans make statements that are irresponsible. You're playing with the lives of millions of people. You're playing with the lives of people. Mr. Biden, Joe Biden, Vice President Biden, is not Christ coming in on a white horse. He's not even a deliverer. He's a politician. And politicians sometimes make the best choice. He's the only choice we have. We can't continue with what we have. So I consider that to be a traitor and a betrayal of Fannie Lou Hamer, who I knew, a betrayal of Dr. Martin Luther King, who I knew, a betrayal of the Army Life Bomb, who I knew. The people who work for this country, to sit home, I think an African-American man or woman that can go out to vote should be whipped. When I say can't go out, but I should mean, because there are some people who have legal restrictions because of the fact that they are felons. But I'm talking about those who can go out to vote. But I'm saying those who can't, that can't go out because of their belief system that they shouldn't vote, they should be whipped. Serious about that. I almost got killed in Victoria, Virginia, registering people to vote. I almost got killed in Tennessee, registering people to vote. I don't have any time for that. Viola Leoza had a bullet put through her head for registering people to vote. So people have paid the price. John Lewis has a plate in his head for registering people to vote. You don't have a right to tell John Lewis F you. That's what you're doing. And that's what Charlemagne is doing by having an irresponsible political statement.
For the record, I just want to say that during that conversation, Mr. Charlemagne never completely advocated for not voting, but he did, he gave a little pushback to Joe Biden, in which Joe Biden said, you know, if you don't vote for me, you're not black. He said, it's not about being black, you know, it's about doing something for our people. But many people interpreted that as, you know, something, you know, which you said and what,
Well, I'm going to hold Mr. Charlemagne responsible. Mr. Charlemagne has about 16, 20 million people. And as I don't know how many people are going to listen to me, but this might go to millions of people later. I don't know where this will go. But I believe you, me, I think about those people. And let me correct when I said they should be whipped, proverbially. I want to correct that. But frankly, if they were whipped, it wouldn't bother me. Because I frankly think that with the work that is done, you're telling people to kiss your behind who have worked and struggled, whose blood fertilize this earth.
So, moving away from the topic of flaming leadership in this country, and sort of transitioning to more of a solution, you alluded to many of the solutions before earlier in the broadcast, but what do you think ultimately has to be the direction to our people? What do you think should be the role to our people? I know you often talk about the creation of more jobs and roles in the medical field for African Americans. What is a part? You don't have to lay out the complete.
I'll try to lay them out.
What would be a comprehensive plan so that we do not get more episodic seizures like we see with with our brother, Mr. George Floyd and Brother Ahmaud Arbery?
Every family every block, every neighborhood, every state, every African American should be organized into a union. We're planning to do that. We want college students to go door to door with us to organize our men, first of all, into a male union. Like you see the Jehovah's Witness and the Mormons and the way the FOI used to be, and organize our men. And for what purpose? Well, what it means to be a man. If you can compete on the basketball court, you have to be on the team, right? They don't let you play basketball one-on-one. Huh? It's no league for one-on-one, right? Am I right? I mean, sometimes people do the pickup, but that's not considered organized sports. Life is just like that. It's not a pickup. It means organized. Now, Ben would advocate that we fund fully the 120 African-American colleges. In fact, we need to expand them. Oh, man, it's 40 million of us. 40 million of us giving $10 a week is $2 billion. And some, and we have business big millionaires, they should give $1 million. And these institutions should be able to offer free tuition, not by the United States government, not by philanthropy, to make sure that young people and even older people decide to get their life together and go back to college should not have to worry about education. It should be free for them, not by government, by us. We got $2 trillion in our pocket. Let's spend 20% of that $2 trillion to develop our people. And so doing, we know that there's a need for at least 500,000 nurses, all right? We also know that there's at least a need for 100,000 physicians. Let's expand the historical black colleges and make sure that every one of them have a medical school program. We need podiatry, foot doctors. We need physicians who are tuned to blood vessels, vascular issues. One of the things people are saying about the COVID disposition is people have vascular issues, clogged vascular, blood clotting. So we need to be focused on that. We need our people, instead of spending all the time coming up with lyrics, to be in labs, creating new medicine, new science. That's the revolution that I know can and will and must happen.
I just wanted to touch on a couple of points that you brought up in that statement and just play devil's advocate for today.
Okay.
Many would push back on what you talked about, having all-male units. You know, some would say that it's 2020. What about female units? What about women's units that engage? What is the role of women? What would they play in this role?
Well, first thing we need, good mothers. Our homes are suffering from the lack of good mothers. E. Franklin Frazier wrote in his book, Negro Families in America, Mothers in Bondage. The African-American mother, just like it has been in bondage, it's only recently that she, Lord, think about that lady who's the son's kid. What? That's a bondage. To see that your son go out every day, and you don't know whether he's come back because he might be killed by one of his own, or killed by a police officer, or some irate white supremacist, or some ignorant person. That's notice. One of his own, a white supremacist, and just some irate Caucasian or irate some other person that's going to take his pain off on somebody else. Not all these people out here would kill African Americans or racists. Huh? I don't think that Caucasian girl there probably was a white supremacist, but she certainly was a victim of being Becky. And I'm using Becky as a college since that she thought she had some type of superiority, and she knew that she could play the Emmett Till story in Central Park. What's her name? Miss Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that first is thought that the men must take responsibility. The biggest assassination and destruction in the history of humanity has been the destruction of the African American male, and he first must be restored. The father has to be restored. We can't agree with Judith Butler that gender is a construction. Judith Butler is a liar, and she doesn't know what she's talking about. That gender is not a construction. When I go to the bathroom, that's not a construction. And if it do have to go to construction, I have to go to a urologist and make sure that that construction is working. That is, the construction God gave me some 60-odd years ago. So they're roles. No, a man is not superior to a woman. Obviously not. A woman is not superior to a man. But we have never had the opportunity to establish our mothers as mothers who can love and nurture and produce leaders. And while we have to, we might as well talk about the fact is this whole idea of being the white man being divine. So a black mother think her son, all he can do is get a job. Mothers, if we can push their sons to be presidents and rulers, leaders, we need that to be established. And the father has to first be established in the home. I'm not afraid to say that. I'm not afraid. I'm not going to buy into this ideology that tells us that, no, that's wrong. No, that's right. Thank you for giving the pushback. I want to hear the pushback because I'm pushed back too. And I still love people who have those ideas. And I hope they don't hate me and think I'm gaslighting down the structure.
Yeah, the argument on that is that, you know, gender and sex is fluid, things like that. So, I mean, I was just providing a pushback because, you know, you're always going to get that. And that has been a slight hindrance to our progress as well.
As a major
pretender.
We need solidarity. We don't need abuse.
That has been a hindrance to a certain extent as well. Now, I want to touch on something else.
Hold on, just open you.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on something else that you brought up as well. We talked about how, you know, a lot of our institutions, our African American institutions, historically black colleges, should maintain its self-sufficiency and shouldn't rely on the government. A lot of people would be upset with that. Just to go back to the interview again, you know, Will Charlemagne and former Vice President Joe Biden, he said, you know, this is about what are you going to do for our people? And I keep hearing this, you know, what are you asking politicians? What are you going to do for our people? What are you going to do for our people? And what you're advocating for is for a complete self-sufficiency.
I think that's a child aspect. You know, when I used to go to the store, and I think you might have wanted what was your favorite sweets?
Switzerland.
Switzerland. And you would say, Daddy, I want Switzerland. And I said, I was shopping. I said, let me make sure my son gets this. And you may ask, I want something else. I want this. I want that. I want readers. That's the daddy's role. So do we think that white America is our daddy? What you going to do for me? It's a childlike question. It's what a man said, what I'm going to do for myself. Now, I don't want the government to do no more for me than what the government does for others. Yes, I think that what we need to have, we need a fair shake. I do think the government, as it opens up funds from the Federal Reserve Bank, to give a priority to those of us who've been brought here as slaves. We should be the first one to go to the window. Yes, for that, I'm poor. But no more than what you should give other people. But I think that should be negotiated. But I think the first thing we should do is take responsibility, Mr. Charlemagne. I think we should think about what are we doing? What, you're from South Carolina, Mr. Charlemagne. Why don't you do something for Bennett College? Bennett, right in your state. What are you doing for Allen University? What are you doing for Bowie, the private colleges in your state? Why don't you raise money like a Bishop Jamal Bryan did for Bennett College? Up, you mighty people, you can accomplish what you will.
Do you think that there's a slight amount of paternalism involved in our way of thinking to the point where, you know, we believe that it is the government's job?
Yeah, because you know what happened? And we believe that the Democratic Party is responsible to do that. The whole idea when you get into religion, I hate to use this idea, but I got to come to it because I'm a preacher. That's what I do. So you ask me for leadership. As long as you think of God as your father and not God as your creator, you always think that some other man that looks like what you think is God owes you something. Well, as a Muslim, African-American, independent thinker, I'm going to tell you, you ain't got no daddy. You are your own daddy. Your responsibility is to pool your dimes, nickels, and pennies. And I've seen it happen in the Nation of Islam when we pooled our money and built. We needed an airplane for Mr. Muhammad. We didn't go and ask the government to buy it. We got together and bought him a plane. And just as a small group dedicated doing that, we can do that again. We can make Howard University the top university in the world. We can make this university the top university in the world. We can make Allen the top university in the world. We can make Morehouse and Atlanta University the top in the world. And we can actually expand and have our own prep school. We don't need to go to Andover. That's the beauty of America. Poor but equal. And let me tell you that. So since we're still talking about what happened to the brother out of Minneapolis, man, the stronger you are, people won't mess with you. You know what happened? The people that owned the Target probably called the governor up and said, my stores are being damaged. And governor, you got to do something about that. And about 2 hours, the police officer, who was just a servant, was snatched up off the street, put in handcuffs, and put in the Hennepin County Jail, where he duly belonged. But if you're powerful, you can make that happen. You don't have to have protest marches. You got powerful institutions. People won't mess with you.
What you're describing is, you know, essentially pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. And what if we never had any bootstraps to begin with? There's an argument to be made here as well from the other.
Well, other days we didn't have bootstraps, and we did more without bootstraps. During what is called the nadir, we opened up more institutions. We had insurance companies. We don't have bootstraps now. We have Jesus. Yeezys. So we got Yeezys. So wait, and they got bootstraps? Let's maybe just pull ourselves up from the bottom of our Yeezys, of our Jordans and others, and do some. The money we spend in sneakers is enough money. If we took 20% of that and put it into African American institutions, what we have is a poverty of mind. A poverty of mind. The incompatibility of responsibility for self. We think it's incompatible to be an African American to be responsible for ourselves. We don't have no bootstraps. We don't have any bootstraps no more. We have real resources. You know why? I know we have resources. I was just at the corner store and I saw a line for Lotto. I went to another corner store. There was a line of Lotto. Oh, give me the picket. I want the third race and the second race. Did we vote? No. I saw the pot dealer right down the street. He didn't seem to have a casting problem. He was making change. He's going into the corner store to make change. So are we broke? We may be broken in spirit, but we certainly are not broken in our pocket.
And on that note, I'm going to end it right there. We're going to continue this. Next Saturday,
we'll continue the interview. And tomorrow at 4 o'clock, I'll be on this station to address the killing, the KKK, and the age of COVID.
Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another edition of Religion.
Are there any questions?
Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Religion Live. I'm your host, Alpha Mohammed II. We'll be back on Saturday. Once again, thank you for tuning in to another edition of Religion Means a Lot.
Thanks.